And this is accession number 12419, and this is reel 3.
Mr. Atkins, reel 3.
In the period of September, October, November, that type of period in 43, Bomber Command casualties were high, and Bomber Harris, from time to time, if he had a maximum effort on, would draw on squadrons, experienced air crew in the squadrons, who were not at that time actually engaged on bombing operations, but had had experience. And my crew, together with other crews from time to time on the squadron, were called upon to join the main bombing squadrons for a particular operation.
How did you like those?
They were completely different to the type of operations I'd been on. I found them quite frightening. One of the reasons being that we'd got used to operating purely on our own, and suddenly to find yourself in a bomber stream with hundreds of other bombers, aircraft, which you could see at times, took some getting used to.
Where did you fly to on this?
I did a trip over Hamburg and Berlin. Altogether, I think I did something like 6 or 7 operations.
Was that the time when the firestorm was raised in Hamburg?
Yes, that was. That's right. There was a big effort on that. It, as I say, it was a completely different environment, a different type of experience. And you were certainly more aware of the German defences.
Did you have any narrow escapes?
We had to take strong evasive action from time to time. We were never actually attacked by a night fighter, although we came under AK-AK fire quite frequently. But it was distressing to see other bombers going down in flames, and seeing the people bailing out and the parachutes, etc. It was a completely different operational experience.
Were there any problems releasing the bombs?
No, we never had any problems with that at all.
How accurate did you feel that you were being?
We had the Pathfinders were operating then with the dropping marker flares. I felt confident that we were hitting the targets if the flares were on target.
What were the aiming points that you were?
It could be a factory area, or railway communications, that type of target. You weren't given a specific factory to bomb. An area was picked out, under instructions from Bomber Command by the Pathfinder squadrons to drop the marker flares to ensure that that area which had been picked out was bombed by the main force.
Did you feel uneasy about civilians being killed?
At that stage of the war, I don't think this entered our minds to any great extent. We were professionally trained to do a specific job, and we carried that out to our best ability.
Which of the cities that you went to did you fear most going to? Hamburg or Berlin?
Berlin, I think, was very heavily defended.
And because of the distance?
Yes, that's right. That also is a big factor.
Did you go to the Ruhr towns?
No, I didn't do any Ruhr trips, no. As I say, we were called upon when they had the when Bomber Command decided they wanted as many aircraft as they could get into the air on a particular operation. At this time, one has to remember that the bombing of Germany was the only effective way that the general population of the UK could see a positive action being taken against the enemy. We'd had our victories in the North African desert, but that was further away from the UK than the bombing of Germany. And I feel that a lot of the comments in present day on the bombing strategy, one has to take into account the feeling and the atmosphere appertaining to conditions in the UK in 43 and 44.
You talked about the fear which you had on the operations. What was morale like amongst the crews?
The morale was excellent. I never experienced this personally, but I think the number of air crew who were affected to such an extent that they asked to be taken off flying duties was very, very small.
Did you know that you could be taken off if you wanted to?
Well, it was not if you it was a stigma. The RAF at that time, you volunteered for air crew duties, and you were volunteers, but you couldn't volunteer to come off. If you reached a stage where you found that you couldn't take any more, then you were dealt with very strict, very, very harshly. You were categorized as LMF, which is lack of moral fibre, and you were stripped of your rank and posted, sometimes I believe, out of the RAF, perhaps into an infantry regiment or such like. As I say, I had no personal experience of this, neither do I know anybody personally who such action was taken on.
Was the Halifax regarded as a poor relation to the Lancaster with bombing?
It was regarded as a poor relation by the Lancaster bomber, yes. As I say, I never flew in Lancaster, so I can't make a good judgment of that. Certainly the Lancaster was a more efficient bomber for mainstream bombing. It could fly faster and it could fly much higher, and also an increased bomb load. But Halifax crews were very loyal to the Halifax. We always thought that the Halifax could take a bit more punishment than the Lancaster. And we had confidence in the aircraft, in the Mark II that we were flying at that stage. The earlier Mark I, they had had problems with, but those had been sorted out. There's a friendly rivalry between Lancaster aircrew and Halifax aircrew.
Some of your, coming back to special operations, some of your special operations were all the way to Poland.
Yes.
Did that create any problems?
It created problems insofar as you had to be extremely careful, and a very good liaison between the pilot and the flight engineer with the way fuel was used. Unpredicted strong headwind, for example, could play havoc with calculations. We had a Polish flight on 138 Squadron, and they did most of the trips to over Poland, but occasionally other nationalities were called in.
How did you find the Polish flight? What was their attitude?
It was the same crew I was flying with. I didn't fly with the Polish crews. It needed a lot more flight planning to try and avoid particular danger areas over Germany and such like. And also we were told that we couldn't always expect a good reception if we were forced to come down perhaps near the Russian front.
Now, can we go on to when you were shot down, please?
Yes. This was on the night of the 10th and 11th of December, 43. We had had it was an operation which had been cancelled the two previous nights due to bad weather. And on the third night, when we were due to take off, for the first time ever, our pilot accidentally ran the aircraft off the perimeter track, and we were bogged in very soft ground. It took something like 2 hours to get the aircraft out of this bogged area back onto the perimeter. And so we were running at least 2 hours behind schedule. And we had a time drop our agent in Denmark, which of course had now been altered. We were not terribly popular that night with the squadron commander, and we left in quite a hurry in the end. As a result of this, it had some effect on us, this delay. And also the fact that the operation had been cancelled the two previous nights. And this was our first time this had happened to us. And I suppose we were not feeling at our best. However, after flying for some hours over the North Sea, we all settled down and put it behind us. We crossed the Danish coast at about 800 feet and flew towards Roskilde, which is a town not far from Copenhagen. It was completely uneventful. We had no flak at all. It was a very bright moonlight night, almost daylight. One of the brightest nights I've ever flown on. Very frosty, very cold night. And we got over the reception area to drop our agent, who we had not had any conversation with. As I mentioned, this was a normal. And shortly after we had made our approach run to drop the agent, we got the correct signals and everything from the ground. We were attacked by a Junkers 88, who made a run on us and missed. Our rear gunner opened fire, and the pilot took as much evasive action as he could, but we were then flying around about 800 to 1,000 feet. There wasn't a lot of height to manoeuvre in. And after about three encounters with the Junkers 88, he hit us and set two of the engines on fire. All this time, our rear gunner was commenting in no uncertain terms over the intercom and was very wound up indeed and was doing an excellent job. We do know for a fact that he hit the aircraft, this Junkers 88, as this was confirmed to us at a later date. The German fighter hit us again, and the pilot said that he would have to make a forced landing. We couldn't bail out, we were far too low altitude. And fortunately, he made an excellent emergency landing in a plough field, and the furrows of the ploughed field were parallel to the ascent, and the hard frosty ground, with no obstructions, enabled us to get down safely. We were extremely lucky. As I say, the aircraft was on fire, and one or two members of the crew had very narrow escapes by, I can think that the wireless operator, when bending down to do something, when he righted himself by his table in the aircraft, there was a gaping hole in the side where the Junkers 88 had fired, and he would have been killed if he'd have been sitting upright. There were various incidents like this. Anyway, we all got out of the aircraft, and not one of us was wounded in any way. The only scratches we had were in jumping onto the ground. The biggest danger was breaking a leg or spraining your ankle. We got the agent out.
Who was he?
He was Fleming Moose, who introduced himself to us in a matter of minutes, and he was the chief agent for the whole of Denmark Resistance.
How do you spell Moose?
M-U-S-S. And there were eight of us, because that night we were carrying another member, a crew member, who was coming with us for experience, a pilot who flew a second pilot. And that was his first operation. We split up, well, there were three officers and five NCOs. And the officers decided to keep together, and I was an NCO, and we kept together. And we split up, and our object was to make our way to Sweden to get back to the UK.
Were the agents with you?
No, the agent, we had to get him away as soon as possible because he was in civilian clothes and he was a very important man indeed, and he got away. The five of us kept together, and we received assistance from the local Danish population, mainly farming, and we were put up in barns and pigsties and such like. And we thought that we were well on our way to getting back to the UK, providing we could get across the water to Sweden. Unfortunately, the last farm we put up at, and we were put into the hayloft. By this time we were very tired, not hungry. We'd been fed well by the Danes, who I have a great respect for. But this particular farmer, who I remember must have been aged around 70 mark, and we were bedded down and we went to sleep. And next thing we knew, we were aroused by the German army pointing machine guns and guns at us and telling us that the war is over for you. We were taken under...
Why do you think he betrayed you?
For money. Apparently he got quite a large reward for... because at this stage we were... the Germans were making it very well known that there were several British air crew on the loose, and there were rewards on our heads.
Had you suspected him?
No, not at all. No, the attitude we had when we contacted the farm was no different than the other farmers we'd had help from.
Where was the farm?
It was a little farm not far from Roskilde. At a place called Friedrichsund. It's only a little village where we were actually taken prisoner. And we were taken by the Germans in a motor vehicle to Copenhagen.
How did they treat you on capture?
They were a bit edgy. But we weren't ill. We weren't physically attacked in any way. There were five of us, and I would say initially at the farm, probably about 30 of them.
So you'd been on the loose for about 10 days?
That's right, yes. And we were, as I say, we moved at night, and we were put up in farms, which we slept during the daytime. And we were very well treated and very well fed, and these people took tremendous risks in helping us.
Did you hate this chap who betrayed you?
We despised him because we found it difficult to reconcile why a man of his age was so tempted with the financial reward. We didn't see he. To best of my recollection, he never appeared before us when the Germans came. The only time we saw him was when we first made contact at the farm, and we were shown somewhere to sleep. He was not there when the Germans came. Well, he was there, but he was not in our presence.
How did the Germans process you?
We were taken to a building in Copenhagen, which I learnt after the war was a disused army, type of Danish army barracks. It was very primitive. There were cells there, and we were kept in solitary confinement and interrogated, but in a very not in depth, because it was the German army that arrested us or took us prisoner, and they weren't competent, and I think they were under instructions to get us to the Luftwaffe in Duleg Luft in Frankfurt, which was the interrogation centre for all Allied airmen shot down. After about 3 or 4 days, we were taken to Germany. We had an escort of about 3 or 4 armed guards, and we were taken by boat from the island of Funen to the main German mainland. I remember changing trains in Hamburg, which was, I've thought about this, and it was quite fascinating in hindsight to be in an enemy country and seeing the enemy going about their normal duties, travelling on trains, and soldiers coming on leave and going back from leave and such like.
Was there much damage?
We didn't see. The railway station itself didn't appear to be very much damaged. The roof was damaged, certainly, but I have no knowledge of the damage to Hamburg, because we were taken in a closed truck, and we had no opportunity to study our surroundings at all.
How did German civilians behave towards you as captives?
Majority were curious. Some of the younger Germans showed hostility by shouting and spitting at us. But we were never actually physically attacked. Our guards, to their credit, kept us under guard. The German military mind worked in the way that if you were a military man yourself and you behaved as a military individual, then they would respect you as a military man. This, providing you were in the hands of the military and not one of the German civilian police organisations.
What happened to you at Duleg Luft?
At Duleg Luft, as I said, it was a centre, an interrogation centre for all aircrew shot down, Allied aircrew, and we were interrogated individually and kept in solitary confinement, and we were given the hot and cold treatment, which has been written about.
What's that?